It's time for the Way of the Master Radio with Kirk Cameron, Ray Comfort, and Todd Friel.
Yes, indeedy, there is a problem in evangelical Christianity. That's a bad thing. The good news is there are some folks called the emergents who have identified the problem. The problem being there seems to be no application of the stuff that's taught in the Bible. It seems to be a rather disconnected sort of faith. Bottom line, there appear to be hypocrites. And to that, and to all the emergent folks, I say, amen. This is Way of the Master Radio. The question then becomes, what do we do now that we've diagnosed the problem? There seems to be people who profess a faith in Jesus Christ, but they do not possess that faith. They are not living it. We agree with the emergents. That is absolutely pervasive, and it is a huge problem. How we go about fixing that is another thing altogether. We are very happy and, frankly, a little surprised. Joining us on the telephone today is Doug Padgett. You maybe are familiar with the person's name. He is one of the leaders. I'm not sure he'd be nuts about that title, but he's definitely one of the higher-profile emergent fellows. He's the pastor at Solomon's Porch. You can visit the website, solomonsporch.com. You can also visit their website. It's emergentvillage.com, and he's with us on the telephone today. Doug Padgett, we're very grateful that you're coming on the show today. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for taking a little time to have me on.
All right, would you agree that we agree there's something wrong in Christianity that a lot of people don't act the way they profess? Fair enough?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. That's not really the motivation of my life or the people I hang around with. We're not, that's not the prime motivator that we have about, you know, the way that we do our church or the way that we interact with people. But I do think it's true that many people's lives stay disconnected from their belief system.
Then speaking as an emergent fellow, then what is the prime motivator of the emergent movement?
Oh, the prime motivator is to try to live well in the world with God and to invite other people to join in the way of Jesus in the world. So it's not really trying to fix struggles that other people, other Christians are having. It's really trying to join together in what seems to be the active work of God in the world, and to invite people to join in that work.
And what about the afterlife?
Yeah, I like to refer to it as the forevermore life. But yeah, I mean, that's a really important piece of the whole understanding of God, is that like at the end of our worship gatherings together at our church, we say, we recite this, the last long sentence out of the book of Jude. And it's one of those pieces that ends with calling for the work that God's going to do to be now, as God has done in the past, does now, and will do evermore. And so it's this really wonderful notion that the Christian church has always held to, that there's a sense of the continuation, the continuous work of God.
Right.
And how you know, individual people interact in that. I think we best understand that through the resurrection of Jesus. But yeah, that's what we're interested in, is inviting people in to participate with God here, as they have in the past, and to stay part of the work of God in the world forevermore.
All right, I'm going to Jude verse 23. Rescue others by snatching them from the flames of judgment.
Yeah, it's helpful, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you think that there's an eternal damnation for people who are not Christians?
Yeah, well, I think there's all kinds of, I mean, the damnation would sort of be that there's parts of the life and creation that seem to be counter to what God is doing, and those are the things that are eliminated and removed and done away with. And so I think that's what damnation is. And so there's people who want to live out that kind of, want to have that good judgment, the judgment of God in their life. I mean, you know, judgment in a biblical sense, that God remakes the world.
Doug, hold on a second. I have no idea what you just said. Here's what I think hell is. Eternal damnation, God sends lawbreakers to a place where there's weeping, there's gnashing of teeth, a lake of sulfur, the worm never dies, eternal conscious torment. Agree or disagree?
Disagree.
What do you think hell is?
I think hell is disconnection and disintegration with God.
I agree with that also.
And I have no idea what you mean, you know, what those sound much more like metaphors than they do like actualities, but I don't know.
Well, those are the words that Jesus used to describe hell.
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah, I know. Yes,
right.
I know.
Okay.
Jesus didn't use them in a string like that, so you just pulled a bunch of words and Jesus strung them together in your own way.
It's called systematic theology. Doug, I'm a good Buddhist. Do I get to go to heaven or hell?
Restating it.
Yeah, Doug, I'm a good Buddhist. Where do I go when I die?
you know, this is not an interesting conversation. I mean, is this what we're going to do? You're gonna put together false little dichotomies and then ask me to answer in one sentence and interrupt my answers?
Well, I don't know what's hard about the question. I'm a good Buddhist. Where do I go when I die?
Well, you probably go to the funeral home, but depending on where you're being born, if that's what you're talking about.
No, Pastor, I'm a good Buddhist. Where do I go when I die?
Okay. This is just not an interesting or helpful conversation for me to be part of. So if that's what we're doing in this conversation, then because what you're asking in this kind of question has to do with a place. Are you suggesting to me that heaven is actually a place? When you say, where do I go? You're suggesting to me that the reign of God, that the place of God is an individual place that you go? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, sir.
Where is that place?
It's called heaven.
Where is it?
We don't know where it is exactly right
now.
Then
why would you ask a question, where do I go?
Just because I don't know where it is doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Besides, then why would
sir,
you
this
ask
is,
where?
This is the core of Christianity. Like, this is no-brainer land, sir.
It is not no-brainer land.
Sure
it's a non sequitur.
I'm a good Muslim. Where do you think I go, Pastor?
Where do I go? See, here we go again. Now, you're talking about a place.
What happens to my soul when I die?
How's that? There's a different question.
All right. What happens to my soul when I die?
There you go. And I'm not just, you know, you're the guy who wants to be precise about words. That's why you put sentences together like this.
Don't you?
Yes, very much. That's why when you put together questions like that and ask them, they don't make any sense.
I'm a good Muslim. What happens to my soul when I die?
You interact with God just as every other human being interacts with God.
You mean Hebrews 9, it is appointed unto man once to die and then judgment?
Yeah, right. That's
so he gets judged.
Right, that's interaction with God.
Uh-huh. And so what's going to happen to the – how is God going to judge the good Muslim?
God's going to judge the life and repair and restore and heal the life of everybody in the same way.
So the Muslim is ultimately not going to go to a bad place. He's ultimately going to be restored with God when he dies?
No, there's going to be no difference between the way God's going to interact with you when you die and the way God's going to interact with a Muslim when a Muslim dies.
So I want to put this into my fundamentalist language. What I just heard you say is there is no difference between the Christian and the Muslim afterlife. God is going to have a good place prepared for both of us.
No, I didn't say a place. See, here you go again.
Okay, a good thing,
a
good event.
What I said
event,
was the way God's going to interact with you is the same way that God's going to interact with everybody. The same experience of all of humanity. God will interact with all of humanity in judgment the same, no matter who you are or what your parents have taught you or what you believe. Now, how a person's life translates into the evermore, that's something that for one to sit on a telephone conversation and say about non-existent actual person Muslim as compared to Todd, for me to suggest that I'm going to tell you how God is going to interact with that individual person, what the result of that is going to be, is not at all within the bounds of historic Christianity.
It's Doug Padgett, SolomonsPorch.com. Actually, I think that's exactly what historical Christianity
I know
is about,
think
and the emergents
is,
are trying to change that.
Not at all.
Ah, okay, so I'm wrong.
What I would suggest you do is I'd suggest you go and read Acts chapter 16, 17, and 18, as we did out loud in our church last night.
Yeah. I'm happy to do that, sir,
and
but
be,
Jesus, Jesus said that he's
Apostle
going to
Paul
judge and there's going to be sheep and goats.
About what happens to all people in their creation and interaction with God. I think that's where you'll find it.
It seems to me that he says very clearly that those people whose sins are not forgiven will be destroyed. They will go to hell. It will be a terrible day. There will be a judgment
on those who have never repented and trusted the Savior.
That's simple. That's foundational. That's orthodox. And anything outside
Todd,
of that is heresy.
Todd, it's you stringing together a series of pop phrases that you've heard from the Bible and then making up your own conclusion to them.
Well, pop phrases from the Bible.
You can play the tape back if you want and watch how you took passages from, by my count, four different biblical passages, strung them together, and made your own conclusion.
How
now,
else do you do it, sir?
If you're comfortable with that being historic Christianity,
I am very comfortable.
I certainly wouldn't.
I'm very comfortable.
Because that's
how do you put your theology together? How do you do it?
Well, what you do is you read the actual Bible story, you read the actual narratives, you read the actual letters, you read what was actually said, and you let it speak for itself. You don't go chopping it up.
All right, so let's just do one where Jesus said there's going to be sheep
together
and goats.
Make your own conclusion. The Christian church has condemned that kind of behavior from the beginning.
Okay.
And I had no idea you did that kind of stuff because I'm not familiar with you whatsoever. But that is just not
All right.
At all
then
the way
Doug,
that a reasonable Christian person should interact with the scriptures.
Well, okay, that's the way it's been done for a long time, but nevertheless.
No, it's not the way it's been done for
a long
time.
Well, you're the one who's emerging, not me. Okay. Nevertheless,
well,
let's take one verse at a time.
Whatever you, I don't know what stream you're from, but whatever stream it is that taught you how to interact with the Bible in that
old-fashioned grammatical historical
approach. You might want to go back and look at some other way to interact.
Yeah, well, no, I don't need a new way. The grammatical historical works just fine for me. Now, nevertheless, let's just take
one grammatical verse. Historical method? You're using the historical method?
Grammatical historical, yes, sir.
The grammatical historical method?
Yes, sir.
By taking different passages of the Bible,
mm-hmm.
stringing them together and drawing your own conclusion?
Yeah, that's how it's done.
I don't think anyone would suggest that that's the grammatical.
What, do you come up with the conclusion first and then go find verses to support it?
No, you let the verses tell you what the conclusions are themselves.
I agree with
that. You
don't
pick from four different places,
okay.
from four different authors, string them together, and then make
right.
your own conclusion.